CPS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Good morning, Bucknutters. Welcome to the Bucknuts Morning 5 here on Monday, May 11th, 2020. I am Dave Biddle. I am joined by Steve Hellwagon. Steve, let's have a little fun on today's show. We've covered Ohio State for a long time, you longer than me. What is your favorite moment of covering Ohio State football?
Oh, Dave, that is so difficult. We were sitting here watching an old game yesterday on Big Ten Network Ohio State Day, which I think they did an outstanding job presenting some of the better moments, you know, in recent history and going back a ways. And I think probably number one is Ohio State versus Miami in the 2003 Fiesta Bowl, double overtime game, and Ohio State won the national championship for the first time in 34 years. And I just think that you know, beating a team that had won, I think, 34 straight games as well with Miami and Larry Coker are kind of a juggernaut. I mean, and you think about the number of NFL players that were on both sides, even down to the freshmen like A.J. Hawk and Bobby Carpenter and, you know, everybody on the Miami side as well. You know, just guys that played in that game who are no longer with us even. I mean, it is pretty crazy, just the star power of that game. And I was down on the field, and they replayed this game recently, and I want to say it was an option play of some sort, and Krenzel gave the ball off to Maurice Claret, and there were six guys from Miami who chased him out of bounds at, like, the three-yard line, and they just – crushed him. I mean, it was the hitting on the field was something that like you'd never seen. And, you know, a lot of the hits wouldn't pass the muster of today's game. There were a lot of helmet to helmet hits in that game that just kind of got overlooked, I guess. It wasn't as big of an impetus at that time. So it kind of tells you how football has changed in the intervening 15 years, but that was probably number one. I think Alabama is certainly up there. The Sugar Bowl for Ohio State, after all the talk and all the bluster from Alabama and how great they are and how great they were and everything. And Ohio State, again, the common theme in those two games was Ohio State was the underdog, and they punched the bully right in the mouth. They were more physical than the opponent, and that's what it takes to win a big-time game like that. I think going to the Final Four in 1999 after the team, I want to say it was like a 20-game turnaround or something crazy. I think the team the year before under Jim O'Brien, his first year, had only won 8 or 9 games, and then to come back and go 27-9 and go to the Final Four with Scoonie Pinn and Michael Redd, I'd put that somewhere at or near the top of the list as well. And waiting to cover a national champion in that sport, and you know, who knows if they're able to bring in some big time recruits in the years that come, like a Malachi Branham or a Chris Livingston or whoever else. Maybe they can get back to the Final Four one of these days and contend for a national championship. So those are probably three of them right there. But I put Miami on a pedestal, and to me, that was, you know, after all the stops and starts of the John Cooper era, where you're ranked in the top five most of the decade. I mean, really, when you stop and think about it, 93, 95, 96, 97, for a period they were in the top five, and 98, half the decade they were a top five team, and yet, you know, unable to get over the goal line, and they finally did.
Yeah, you touched on my favorite moment. It was Alabama, and it's tough because if you beat Russia but you lose to Finland, it wouldn't matter, right? They still needed to beat Finland. Sorry, Oregon. So it's like it's tough to pick the semifinal.
That was an anticlimax. They sent poor Mark May home because they had no talking points for him. He was in Fort Worth for like a day, and they realized, oh, Mark, this isn't going to work.
This is not going to go well.
Yeah, nothing you can say about how Oregon's going to mess up Ohio State because it's not possible.
No, this is it's not going to fly, Mark May. You're going to have to go home. Well, you don't have to go home, but you got to get up out of here.
You're not going to go on television.
My favorite moment is definitely the Alabama game, just because, as you mentioned, Ohio State had technically never even beaten an SEC team in a bowl game. Although I covered their game against Arkansas, as you did, in the 2010 season. To me, that counts when they beat Arkansas, Trestle's last game. We didn't know it at the time. It was going to be his last game, but it was his last game as Ohio State's football coach. But, yeah, everything you said about Alabama, just getting that monkey off your back, and there couldn't be a better team in the SEC to do it against. It's not like you beat – we're going to get to Tennessee in a moment. Tennessee might be back. It's not like you beat Tennessee that year. You beat Alabama. It's not like you beat Arkansas. You beat Alabama. And here's what was so cool about it. It was the first ever college football playoff. You know, it's just what a great way to do it, that three-game run they did. And then my favorite moment from the game itself, of course, is the Ezekiel Elliott 85-yard run to put them up 42-28. Really put the game away, even though Alabama did make a run there. Urban tried to throw that bomb really for no reason. Alabama got the ball back, but really they didn't have much of a chance. But once Ohio State got up by two scores with only about, what 4 minutes left or something like that, it just felt like the game was over. So, yeah, that was my favorite moment was the 2014 college football playoff game against Alabama, you know, the Sugar Bowl.
I was coming down on the elevator to go do interviews about that time. And I get off the elevator and they had a television right there in the elevator lobby at the Superdome. And all I see on the screen are people in red cheering. And I'm like, oh dear, what did Alabama just do? And I look up because I knew Ohio State was mired deep in its own end. So I'm thinking, well, geez, what's more likely to have happened, that Ohio State turned it over and Alabama scored? And lo and behold, I look up and they're replaying. I figured it was a safe time to go down because Ohio State was deep in its own end. I figured they'd run three plays and punt the ball. But, no, they blocked it perfectly, had the perfect call for the situation, and Evan Spencer crashed in from outside and took out a linebacker and at least one other guy. And, he hit the hole and was gone. What I love about that play is, you know, they were doing those SEC-styled game cast and probably an Ohio State Big Ten-styled one. And Greg McElroy on the SEC-Alabama one, he got to about midfield and he just gave it he's gone. And it was kind of like, you know, this is morbid to say, it's kind of like, you know, Walter Cronkite and JFK, you know, he's gone, you know, just the complete realization that all hope is lost. And I think for Ohio State fans, that exercised a lot of demons as well. And regarding Arkansas, the SEC purists certainly didn't count that as an Ohio State win over an SEC team. I mean, they're, you know, barely been in the league 5, 6, 7 years, whatever, when it happened. And they probably didn't want them anyway. They're, good God, it's Arkansas. So, you know, whatever.
No question about it. Yeah, Evan Spencer took out two guys on that run, including, as you mentioned, one of the linebackers. The linebacker was Trey DePriest, you know, from right here in Ohio, from Sprint, right down the road in Springfield, Ohio. Yeah, really, really tough for that to happen. All right, let's move on. I promised we would talk about Tennessee. Has Tennessee finally woken up? I kept saying they're a sleeping giant, but they need the right coach. They've really been asleep since 1998, and I didn't think Jeremy Pruitt was the right coach. I'm still not convinced Jeremy Pruitt is the right coach, but, man, they are recruiting their butt off. Ohio State still has the number one ranked class for the 2021 class, but the gap is closing a little bit. Ohio State still has a pretty wide margin. Tennessee is now number two in the country, though. Ohio State has 295 recruiting points. Tennessee has 252, so a 43-point gap, which is still a very large gap, but, man, it was like 80 there for a while. But has Tennessee woken up? Are you buying this? Is our friend Bill King going to be very happy down there in Tennessee?
Well, I think the idea, it's several things. First of all, the SEC is a monster unto itself, and I do give them credit where credit is due. You know, they've got six programs that are right at or near the top of college football. And I include LSU. I think, you know, yeah, it was a one-year wonder type thing. And, you know, we're going to find out, you know, what Coach O does with his own guys and without Joe Burrow. But, you know, Georgia and Florida are legitimate in my mind. Well, Florida, you know, to a degree, they haven't made a playoff yet. But, you know, a lot of people think they're going to be in for a big season this year. These schools have all changed coaches so often, it's hard for me as an old timer to keep track of who's where. But Pruitt was kind of a, you know, the first couple years was kind of a curious hire at Tennessee. They didn't beat anybody of note, but he is starting to stack some recruits in there. And, you know, you go back to the glory days under Philip Fulmer with Peyton Manning, and then they won the national championship with T. Martin in 98. And that was probably the high point of Tennessee football. I mean, Johnny Majors was big back in the 50s and 60s, I guess. But, you know, I look at it and, you know, there's no reason why they can't bring in some top talent. I don't know that Tennessee is going to be the deepest state year in and year out for them to recruit to, but I think that they can go into Georgia, go into Florida, and get some top guys. So, you know, Tennessee, and they could also come up to the Midwest. They're one of the closer SEC programs to the better high school football played in the Midwest. So they can kind of draw from both areas because it's driving distance really from both areas. You can get there in about a day from, you know, most parts, you know, on the Eastern seaboard and, you know, north and south. So I think that the potential is there. I just think he's going to have to stack, you know, more than one class on top of another for them to make some inroads. And they have to get back to beating Florida and Georgia on a regular basis, and that's not happening. And their crossover rival every year is Alabama, and that's not happening. So, you know, right now 9-3 is the high water mark, I think, for that program, and that's if they hustle. I mean, that's without getting upset in one of the other nine games. So they've got a tough road to hoe, but at least they're making an effort. The last 20 years, as you mentioned, really – since that championship in 98, I don't think they've had much to write home about. And, you know, very few top 10 finishes, certainly. And I can't remember that they won the SEC. I could be wrong. Since 98, maybe they did peek in there and win it one year, but I don't recall it. So, yeah, it. I mean, Florida, didn't Florida go one stretch where they beat them like 10 or 12 years in a row or something? So, you know, and Georgia has been at or near the top of college football, and that's who they recruit against, and that's who they play against. And so, you know, they got some uphill battles there, but, you know, I guess college football's better when Tennessee is good, kind of that old Colin Cowherd thing that the college football is better when Notre Dame's good and baseball's better when the Yankees are good, that old thing. But, you know, these blue blood programs, you know, to a degree, and I consider them – kind of on the edge of that, you know, a top 15, 20 program maybe when they're going good. It's good to see that, you know, at least they're making the effort.
Yeah. I've like I said, I thought for a long time that was a program that was underachieving big time. We'll see, just because they're putting together a great 2021 recruiting class. That's not going to help them this year. So Jeremy Pruitt's entering his third year, so he still needs to win on the football field. And I do want to point this out. Tennessee has landed 21 kids already. Now, they landed a couple five stars recently, so it's not like it's just quality and not quantity, or quantity and not quality, but and Ohio State has 18 in their class. If you get on Bucknuts right now and look at the commitments, it'll say Ohio State only has 17 kids because they haven't added the punter yet, because there's not a player page for him yet. Really, nobody knew about the punter they landed until the moment they landed him. They got him from Australia last week. So Ohio State has 18 kids in their class, and Tennessee has 21. Speaking of recruiting, I want to end the show with this. Ohio State now has four of their members of their 2021 recruiting class that have been invited to the Army All-American Bowl. It's not sponsored by Army anymore, just the All-American Bowl. Quarterback Kyle McCord, running back Travion Henderson, cornerback Ja'Kalen Johnson, and linebacker Reed Carrico. Travion Henderson got the most recent invitation. That came down over the weekend. So at least four kids from Ohio State are going to be playing that All-American Bowl. That's always a fun event, Steve.
Yes, it is. And, you know, I've been doing our recruiting series looking at past classes, and I go back to that Terrell Pryor class where they had like 8 guys in San Antonio, and our guy Gary Houstu was down there, and he grouped them together. And that was such a neat picture that you think about what the kinship that those guys had and what they were able to accomplish while eligible, at least, the next several years at Ohio State was pretty remarkable. So, you know, I think that that is a good recognition, and people are always excited when a guy picks your school for the All-American Bowl or the Under Armour game, the other one that's on ESPN. But I think what's even better is when you have a national top 100 kid and he's committed early and then can help with the recruiting aspect. And I think that that's what's even more exciting. So I think that this class is just going to continue to grow. And Ohio State's only had one number one class in the last 30 years. That was in 1996. That was Andy Katzenmoyer. Yep. Yeah, a lot of good players.
Gary David Barry, Boston.
David Boston.
Michael yeah. Wiley. Oh, yeah. Michael
Wiley. That was a heck of a class. And, you know, they've had some number two classes over the years. So maybe Ohio State can break through and have that number one consensus class this year. They had I'm up to 2013, the Ezekiel Elliott and Bosa class. I'm going to write that one probably later today, so that'll be out later today. People can enjoy reading about how that all came about. And what was remarkable, Dave, was it was in the second year of the coach's tenure, which Jim Tressel in his second year, that 2002 class was amazing with Carpenter and Hawk, who we referenced earlier, and Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith and a lot of great players. Well, now Meyer in his second year had the 2013 class, which was Bosa and Elliott, and now we're seeing with Ryan Day in his second, you know, full year. You know, basically he was hired to finish off the last class in 2019, a month or two before. And now that he's had a full cycle. So the first full cycle for Tressel was number two. The first full cycle for Meyer was number two. The first full cycle for Ryan Day is going to be top three, probably, if not number one. So it's kind of a perpetual thing that once you get your program in place and you get your priorities in place, that these guys have hit the ground running. And certainly Meyer was aided by having Mark Pantoni, the same Mark Pantoni, who is still the man behind the curtain pulling those strings. So really helps to have expert, best-in-class type people running your recruiting.
There's no question about that. Steve Hellwagon is also best-in-class. Really appreciate it, Steve. And I appreciate all the listeners out there for tuning into the show. Again, if you're listening on iTunes and you like the show, leave us a 5-star review. It really helps. We appreciate that. Thanks again for listening. And let's hear that Buckeye swag, best damn band in the land.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top 5 leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.